Because I have a tendency to pick up that author's style. So, and then of course I violated by reading Terry Pratchett anyway. I'm binge reading all of Terry Pratchett's Discworld series again. Anyway, we digress.
Because that's what we do.
I'm sorry. How could you guys digress? I've listened to your podcast.
We can't get any worse.
Now you see, that's how we should have started.
Actually, I'm already recording.
Well, in that case, welcome to Wowie.
In that case, welcome to Wowie. In fact, I will introduce the show and then hand it over to Tom because he knows our guest all the better. So I will introduce the show and Tom will introduce our guest.
I think it probably worked better the other way around. Okay. Since Tom knows me. You could follow my script.
I didn't actually quite get a study up more than Facebook chat, so sorry.
So let's bring some structure to this. Are you?
My name is Don Scobie, and my co-host, as always, and not so unusual, but still unusual per our last podcast, is, of course, Tom Trebeth. And we have today with us Alan, who's also got a last name, but I'll let Tom handle that because I don't remember... But this is...
I know how to delegate. Hey, Alan, what's your last name? I'm guessing it's Amit.
Boy, you know, it's so good to be interviewed by classy journalists.
We should go find some, yes.
Jeez, guys.
Anyway, this is Writing on Whidbey Island, where we focus on things having to do with writing and Whidbey Island. And it's a fairly free-form show, which you can probably imagine already from when I started recording and these two gentlemen didn't know that I started recording, but I figured I'd edit it. But, you know...
He called us gentlemen.
I was talking about the two homeless guys sleeping over there.
He knows me only from Facebook.
On that note, anyway, this is another episode. I think this is our fifth episode.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we're on a fifth at this point.
Speaking of which,
I'm going to have to change my date. Anyway, I will hand this over to Mr. Tom.
Oh, hey, sir.
And he will introduce Alan.
And we still haven't answered because I keep hearing Amit.
Rhymes with damn it.
So appropriate. Is that on the business card that goes with this?
No, but I thought it was part of my middle name when I was a kid.
But, Dad, I'm Jesus Christ.
Well, that's a different story.
A brief bio for you. You're here for a number of reasons, but one of which, the legitimizing thing is the fact that you have a book called...
Learning to Float.
Which is about...
My first 3 years as a caregiver for my wife, Dolores.
How's she doing, by the way? Where you can dance around that?
I think I'll dance today.
But she was a writer too, right?
She is a writer. In fact, I have one of her books here.
Ah, so there's why.
Iridescent Light, which won the Washington Book Award.
Oh, she has a marvelous
nonfiction
name.
And she used to be the art critic for the Seattle Times.
I did not realize.
And this is a collection of bios of artists that comprise the Northwest School in the 40s and 50s.
Oh, yeah, familiar with. Yeah. I've had to write some articles about them.
And she's my muse.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
And the other book you have sitting there?
Oh, the other book, well, this is Learning to Float, available wherever you want to buy books. And this is Being What Makes a Man, that's edited by a woman from San Juan.
San Juan Island.
San Juan Island, yeah. Who was faculty at the Master of Fine Arts and Creative Writing program that the Northwest Institute of Literary Arts used to run.
And it used to be part of...
It was...
The central part of the Whidbey Island writing community.
Right, exactly. And I was going to say lucky enough, but I'm not sure that's the proper word.
There's good luck and bad luck.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to become involved with it at a fairly early stage, the MFA program anyway, when I moved to the island in 2002.
17 years now.
17 years. I've lived longer in the house that I'm in now than I've lived anywhere in my life.
That says something.
I'm not sure what it says.
Yeah, it says you're stuck. Yeah. It says you're
home. My wife doesn't want to move.
There you go.
It says. She was, when we moved here, I was working in Tukwila, which, if for those of you who don't know the area,
wow,
is a long way from here.
And
let's
a ferry.
See, with good traffic, it's only an hour and 15. With bad traffic, it's 3 days.
In good traffic, it's an hour and 45. Hour and a half, hour and 45. So I've heard.
So you've heard.
I was commuting rush hour, so there was no good traffic.
But see, as a
writer... There was traffic, though, yeah.
There was traffic. And it was midwinter, too.
As a writer, we're familiar with myth. So the myth of being able to drive to Tukwila is something you recognize.
And the myth that there's something in Tukwila once you get there.
Oh, there's a shopping mall. Come on,
there is
now.
A shopping mall.
And one of the neighborhoods that has one of the highest revenue streams for the local public schools, because so much of that city is shops and stores.
Fascinating.
And there's so few people that the kids get treated really well.
Yeah.
But that's digressing.
Yeah,
but like you say, we digress. So.
Anyway, where
was
I?
Time.
Oh, so we were moving to Whidbey Island from Seattle. And my wife, as I said, is a writer, and she got involved with the Writers Association.
Ah, okay, the Whidbey Island Writers.
Whidbey Island Writers Association when she got here. And I was working, at the time I was working for the University of Phoenix at our campus down in Tukwila, and we were going through a reaccreditation process with the Regional Accreditation Board to keep our status and our access to public funds and stuff. And I heard, and Dolores came back from a meeting saying that the Writers Association was going to start an MFA program. And I said, oh, well, you know, gosh, that's great. I think it's a wonderful idea. Maybe I can help.
Yeah.
So I called Wayne Udy, who was the he was the director of the program and one of the writing teachers here on the island, and just an all-around great guy. And somebody you guys might want to think about having an interview
That's
with.
That's why I'm writing his name down as we speak.
He might be beating us to the question.
Anyway, so I called him and I said, you know, let's meet. I want to hear about the MFA program and see if I can help in any way. And told him what I'd gone through with accreditation. And he saw a fresh body and fresh meat. And
somebody volunteering to help? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, of course, ultimately I wound up as chair of the board. And we did get accredited, and I had nothing to do with it, actually.
See what happens when you volunteer?
Yes. But
that
it was
a heck of an accomplishment, because as I recall, it was, the only MFA program that wasn't a...
It was the only MFA program that wasn't connected with a college or a university.
In the United States.
In the United States.
I mean,
and it was also it was also one of the most well-respected ones for as long as it was in existence.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, we had 10 or 11, 12, thank you, graduation classes, graduation ceremonies, and I don't know how many people graduated. I forget the figures. But several of them got contracts off their dissertations.
Such
I mean, their
deal.
Theses got
Sweet.
Picked up by agents and then by publishers. So
nice.
We're real proud of it. Yeah.
So did
anyway,
you...
that started. That got me involved in the writing community here. Because.
But were you writing prior to that? Prior to learning to float?
I was not writing. I don't know how to describe this. My background, my educational background, is as a lawyer. And so I was doing a lot of writing, but it was legal writing, right? And as I explained to my students when I was teaching, my wife was trained as a journalist, so if she could say something in five paragraphs, she said it in five sentences. And I was trained as a lawyer, so if I could say something in five paragraphs, I had to use five pages. And I was good at that, but I wasn't good at the five paragraphs, right? So no, I wasn't doing any creative writing, so to speak, except for my briefs, which were pretty creative.
And yet, that sort of thing ends up being practice anyway.
Oh yeah,
I found that to be the case for me because I have my background as engineering.
Yeah.
But then having to describe things to managers, well, that was a marvelous practice.
Yeah.
Taking two vocabularies from part of the same language and putting them together again.
My first experience in writing and being published actually was in high school when I was the business manager of our school newspaper. I'm not quite sure why I was the business manager, but it was an open slot, and they said, hey, why don't you be the business manager? And I said, okay. And they said, oh, by the way.
So have you learned about not volunteering yet?
It got me out of class, man.
Oh, well. He says this while wearing a Hawaiian shirt. When he says it got me out of class, man, I mean, it really carries man more.
Well, he's wearing a Jimmy Buffett polo shirt.
He does.
Yeah.
There's so a story behind that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, there is.
There's no story behind
it's
the Hawaiian shirt.
It's actually 140,000 words long, but that's another story.
I'm not going to read it.
Let's just surmise it with this. Do you know why nobody leaves Margaritaville?
Because they're drunk.
You have to pass through Hangoverville.
Oh.
Ba-dum-bum. Anyway, I was the business manager of our newspaper in high school, and I was told by the, must have been the advisor, faculty advisor, maybe the editor, that because the business manager the year before wrote a car column, that was now the beat for the business manager. I knew nothing about cars. Still know nothing about cars.
Doesn't mean you can't write about it.
What I did learn was that if I spell the guy's name right, talked about how beautiful the car is, and just throw in anything, right? It doesn't make any difference. So I wrote about high compression hubcaps. And people loved it, right? Because,
if nothing else is satire.
And the people whose cars were featured, they loved it because they got their picture and their car's picture in it, and everybody at school was talking about it.
I wonder what he'd say about my truck.
Oh, yeah, that's worth a tour on the way out. But anyway.
Is there mushrooms growing in it?
Well, it's nicknamed the Dalmatian truck.
Okay.
It's a white truck, but it had some rust spots, and I wanted to seal those up before winter last
year.
Yeah, well, no, it was fall, so I had a limited amount of time. So I hit the rust spots with a wire wheel brush on a drill, and then just sprayed it black on this white truck. So I would know where to go back to do the paint right this summer, which was months ago.
Yeah. So do we now, have summer?
Now I need to touch up. Yeah, now really. I need to touch up some of those spots. So I can work on it next summer, or at least that's the notion.
But at this point, I think you're past the bungee cord phase.
I'm past the bungee cord phase, yeah.
So the doors will actually stay closed
The doors actually stay closed. I think I still have to adjust one of them to keep water from coming in. But I have all these black dots all over my white truck. So
and here I thought we were going to talk about riding on Whidbey Island.
I think you guys are doing a great job of just pointing out to me that you can find material anywhere. You don't have to know what you're talking about to write a car column. It's really the sort of thing that there are so many folks that are intimidated by writing. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to write about. I don't know how to write about
everything
it.
Is a writing prompt.
Right.
Everything is a writing prompt.
And that's the thing I finally caught on to. And it's just, that's why, you know, you find yourself in this situation where you're all of a sudden a caregiver. And there are other folks that would lament that. Sorry for any kind of a pun on the name. And,
we digress to something else.
I've been called a lot of things.
Morose.
But, you know, there you go. I mean, there's actually something that's not just a story, but it's something to contribute to other folks who are in a similar situation.
Well, that's... Thanks for the segue. That's how the book got put together, was that when my wife stroked, obviously friends and family wanted to know what the hell was going on. So I spent the first couple of weeks sending out individual emails and phone calls to everybody, and I said, oh, you know, this is it. I can't keep doing this.
Nope.
So I started writing emails, and this was in 2005. So a friend said, hey, I can put a blog up for you. And I said, I don't know what the hell a blog is, so no.
Yeah.
Probably a mistake, but who knows. Anyway, so I started writing emails and then sending them out to whoever wanted to see them, and then there was a secondary distribution and a couple of cases of tertiary distribution.
Yeah.
And then the emails morphed a little bit from what was going on with Dolores to being my journal. Because writing the entries helped me realize what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And after about a year or so, people said, God, this is stuff. You know, some people didn't bother reading them. I'm sure most people read them but didn't respond, which was fine because I didn't care. I was writing them for me.
Right, yeah.
And then people were saying, you know, you should publish this. There's something here. And what I realized was that there's a lot of books written about caregiving, most of which are either technical books. Hey, Carrie. Written by professionals.
Yeah.
Or they're books written by people who are caring or had cared for somebody who died. A child or a parent. In a few instances, a spouse. And my situation was a little different because Dolores wasn't going to die from this.
Right, yeah.
So I was dealing with a chronic, looks like there's going to be a party.
Well, these guys were performing where I was just demoing my book here for the previous 4 hours. So I'm watching them roll in and listening to the sound, but also smirking because I know that band.
Yes. It's a good band. I wish I were somebody to dance with. I was walking past.
I was inside. I just got to talk to them.
Look at me.
Yeah. I'm ball thumbs.
Anyway, we interrupted your story because we digressed.
Yeah, and I forgot where I was.
You were talking about
your writing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. After a couple of years, things leveled off at home with Dolores, and I had nothing else to write about because there wasn't a whole lot of changes going on. We had plateaued.
Yeah, really.
So
progress had been made.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started thinking, well, maybe there's something to that. I'd always wanted to write a book, and I knew I wasn't going to write fiction because I quit writing fiction when I quit practicing law because it wasn't any reason to anymore. So I started working on taking the emails and seeing where the similarities were, where the paths were, where the themes were, put it all together. I took some writing classes.
Okay. Do you have any idea how many emails, how many thousands of words you had at that point?
I don't. I have copies of all the emails. I can add them all up.
Because the same thing happened with me in my first book in that I was bicycling across the United States, and my wife at the time didn't want to be calling everybody up or relaying all the information, so I would just, whenever I could find a place for email, because this was a long time ago, I would send out an email and she would just distribute it. And when I got back, I found out that a writer friend of mine, pointed out I had 15,000 words in the emails. And he said, that's way more than enough notes to write a book. And it only took him 9 months to convince me to write it. But that's why I'm curious, because so many folks find themselves in these situations without realizing they're building a resource.
I'm sure it was more than 15,000 words, but I don't know how much there was. I know that the first draft of the book was probably close to 90,000 before I started cutting.
And where do you think you ended up? That looks to be about...
It's about 65,000-70,000, I think, was the target when I was looking at how long most memoirs are. And there was a lot of duplication in the first round because it was, you know, something happened in August of 2007 and happened in July of 2008, I wrote about it both times.
Yes.
Right? Because that's what was happening.
Yeah.
At least I wrote the emails that way. So I wrote the book, wrote the draft, went to the writer's conference, pitched it to some agents. Like I said, took a bunch of writing classes, was in a writer's group did we meet in the writer's group? Did we know each other before then?
Before you and I met at the writer's group, Susan was telling me about your emails.
Okay.
So I was one part of the tertiary, catching hints of the story that was going on. And lots of compliments at that point that I don't know if you ever heard them or not.
I didn't, but thank you.
Well, they get delivered, you know, 17 years later, so, you know, just patience for an author.
Third party.
I need them today. Thank you very much. so then I started with the help of all of those things, I put together what I thought was a fairly decent manuscript, sent it to an agent friend and to a really good friend who is a published writer, and sent it to another agent who had asked for it after I pitched the did the pitch at the writers' conference.
Yeah.
And they all sent, I got great responses back, all of which said, this is not a book.
Oh.
This is a series of emails, and you need to flesh it out some.
Oh, okay.
You know, they gave me specific things to do, all of which I knew. I mean, all of which, you know, when they said it, I said, oh, yeah, that's absolutely right. Had no idea how to do it. None.
Hmm.
Tried four or five different things.
In terms of outlining? Or
yeah.
In terms of...
Yeah, outlining and storyboarding it and fleshing out, you know, background information, because the people that I was writing to knew me and they knew my wife,
yes,
right?
Yes, you know. Right. You don't have to describe Whidbey Island to a Whidbey Islander. You don't have
exactly.
to describe.
Yeah. Exactly. So for about a year, I didn't do anything with it except sort of every once in a while let it resurface and say, okay, what the hell am I doing with it now? And then I was in a writer's group, another writing group, and one of the people in the writing group whom I knew was both an editor and a memoirist and taught memoir writing.
Oh, yeah.
So I asked her to edit it, and I said, look, I don't need a developmental editor so much. I don't need a copy editor. I need a developmental editor.
Because so those terms I hear many different definitions for.
All right. So the way...
Yours?
Okay. A copy editor to me, and I live with one of the finest, is sort of a grammar nerd and is into the structure and the flow of things and,
okay.
and word usage. And to me, a developmental editor, at least that's what I needed, was somebody that could take the whole or take the idea and say, okay, here's how you get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
So they can help you with the flow, with the arc.
The one can make sure every single sentence is correct, but the other one's going to make sure the right chapters are there?
Correct, yeah. Pretty much. And she did a great job. It cost me a lot of money, but it was all worth it. Because I couldn't do it. I mean, it was just...
Oh, it's so hard to read your own book and actually critique it and then fix it. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and...
It's possible, but outside help helps.
Always. Always. Outside help. Get, you know, experts in whatever you can do.
Well, you had people looking over your cookbook. I mean, you even had testers.
I had a lady who had actually graduated as she did a dual major, and she'd actually graduated with being an editor as one of her feathers in her hat, so to speak. She was looking to go into the industry, so she offered to edit my book volunteer for credit.
Sweet.
Nice.
Right, which at my budget was the perfect price.
Yeah.
What I realized, too, though, was that if I took some recipes, if I could find some people that seemed dedicated to where if I gave them recipes and said, make the recipe, take some photos, answer these couple of simple questions to let me know how it went, right? What I was trying to find out was, did... Because if you think about a recipe book, but I think this is to say with all writing, a recipe book is a technical manual. It's technical writing.
Right.
Right. But, I mean, there's a certain character of technical writing, whether you're writing a kid's book or a memoir or whatever. It's got its own mechanics that needs to go
into. Well, there's rules of the genre.
Right, right.
So you still have your life and humor in yours, though. It's not just...
Well, that, too.
Crack an egg.
I wouldn't have made through it. Right. But no, I did do those test bakers, and I had about a 50% response. The way that I did that too, though, is with going online with my company Facebook page. I said that I played a little bit of a trick on them. I said that I was going to have test bakers, and these people were going to see some recipes prior to the release of my book, but I'm only going to take 6 people. 12 people applied. I let them know that they were among the 6, right?
Right.
Okay, and
one,
what
one,
happened?
Two, two, three, three,
I
four,
sent
four.
Out these recipes to 12 people, and 6 people responded. So I figure it's that 80-20 sort of thing, right? So I ended up getting a bit of a spectrum, and I got a response, and I got six, which is really what I was looking for. I didn't need six with four people replying and two people not, because I felt that that didn't really give me quite enough. So, yeah, I put it out there that way, and I figured as soon as I put the recipe out, or recipes,
yeah,
to these people that said, sure, we'll be test bakers, I figure, well, at that point, it's already, you know, released to the world, so to speak, so what's the difference if it's 6 or 12 or whatever? And then as I got close to the publication, I started releasing those recipes to the public, and I actually, I told people, here's these four recipes that I'm going to release. Which one do you guys want next? And I engaged my audience that
way.
Nice. And if they said, we want, you know, butterscotch coffee cookie squares. Okay, and if I got 20 responses for that and four responses for double chocolate biscotti, well, it's not going to be double chocolate biscotti. Week four.
It means you have a readership that has no taste.
Possibly. I don't think I would tell them that. But in any case, yeah.
The person saying that again was...
I used that to build some momentum behind my book.
Yeah, nice. But I would just like to say that if you need a taster in the future, not a baker, but a recipe taster, I'll be happy to be one.
Well, I was actually in
see,
production.
See, there you go, volunteering again.
Right, yeah. See, were you in the Navy? Because they have this thing, N-A-V-Y, never again volunteer yourself, because I'm not hearing that. No, the thing is I ended up having my production baking business for more or less 16 months. I don't remember right now. A little bit over a year. And I was working 60 hours a week and making the same, I don't know, four to six recipes regularly. But part of my passion is in creating recipes. So volunteering to be a tester in that regard is also fantastic, because I like bringing this thing that I've had in my mind to fruition and then getting it to someone else and seeing them have that aha moment in something that they enjoy.
That's so interesting. That line of there actually applies to writing as well.
Okay.
Because you're bringing something in mind to fruition.
Yeah.
And you're, I can't, you know, do it verbatim. We're recording it. You can get the transcript if you want.
Until the batteries run out.
And there you go. But that idea of creating something and not being solitary about it. The fact that it's going out there and it's interacting with other people.
Right. And I also have, when it comes to baking, it's the same as writing. When I look at it and go, oh, I have this thing. It's my baby. I've created this. It's wonderful. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to open that up and get that to other people. And I know some people aren't going to like it.
Right.
But I know, I'm pretty sure some people are going to like it. Hopefully, a lot of people are going to like it. So let me go out on that limb. Let me risk, right? And a lot of people have that problem with opening up about their writing. I don't know that it's a problem, but I have that same trepidation when it comes to my recipe, sure.
I want to say two things about that. One is, if your recipes screw up, you still are left with something to eat. If your book screws up... you got nothing.
No, you can still build a career off of that.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, there was 50 Shades of Grey, wasn't
there? Yes,
there
really are.
So I took a workshop from a...
I think that was mentioned in the last podcast. Yeah, that one turned kind of blue.
Susan or Cam?
Susan. I don't know that we're naming names.
So
except
I took,
for the fact that they're on records.
Yeah.
They named their own names.
So I took this workshop from a writer named Ann Randolph, who came to Whidbey a couple of years. And she's a monologuist and a memoirist and a performer.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things that she impressed upon us over and over and over and over again was not to let perfection get in the way of creativity.
Mm-hmm. No, we're making a bumper sticker for him that says
don't let good be the victim of great.
Yeah. And I had a student once who was a perfectionist and spent 15 hours working on a redraft of a personal essay that basically increased her score by a point and a half.
Right.
And she said, what am I supposed to do? I said, get a life.
Yeah, really?
Nice.
She got very upset and quit. So it goes.
So having written the books that you've written,
yeah.
If you were to write again, is there anything you would do different? I'm assuming you're still writing.
I'm still writing. Is there anything I would do different? Yeah.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Well, what I'm writing now, what I'm playing with now, because I told Dolores that I really wanted to write another book, so she had to get something else wrong with her, so I could write another memoir.
She has a sense of humor.
Pull for the team.
Not that night, she did. It was one of those jokes that fell flat. I'm writing a...
How comfortable is your couch?
Very, actually. It was my parents. I've slept on it a lot. usually not when I'm sober, but sometimes. Anyway, I've been writing a series of vignettes about my life.
Oh.
Called My Life as Anecdote. And it's sort of... the themes that I find running through it already have to do with a difficulty I have with authority and being thrown out of a lot of institutions.
It's an interesting thing for a lawyer slash attorney to say, considering you are the authority figure in a case like that.
Actually, I'm not. Actually, the judge is the authority figure.
There's always a higher authority figure, isn't there? I'm sure the judge thinks there's somebody telling him what to do.
Yeah.
Or her what to do.
Apparently, our president doesn't think there's a higher authority figure, but the rest of us do. And we're not going to talk politics here. So.
We're waiting for the lightning storm to come through.
Yeah, no shit. I've written so far about being thrown out of Boy Scouts and trying to hit my best friend over the head with a hammer when I was 5 years old. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Stuff that you can walk into and have it either be tragedy or comedy, depending on how you want
well,
to
play. I opt for comedy because at the first writers' conference I was ever at that the Whidbey Island Writers Association sponsored, at lunch one day, on the tables there were scattered little quotes about writing. And I picked one up, and I remember it being from William Zinsser, who is a writing prof and an editor down in Los Angeles, although I tried to research the validity of that attribution, and I haven't been able to do it. But I love the quote. It's I want to make people laugh so that they will see things seriously.
Ooh, nice.
And
I'm going to keep thinking about that one.
Yeah, that's been sort of my driver.
Yeah.
So I don't write comedy, but I try to make things humorous. I've tried writing comedy, and I don't have any idea how to do it. I'm really impressed with comedians who can. So
it's one of those, I was talking with somebody earlier today, somebody complimented me on my book with the humor in it, and I went, who put that in there?
Yeah.
But, you know, to find that if you force it, it doesn't work, but
right.
It can just...
It's that copy where somebody was writing in the margins.
Yeah. I mean, I really like stand-up, but I'm more into improv.
Yes, right.
Because then I don't have to plan or rehearse or memorize.
So when do you think that book will be?
I don't know if it'll ever be written. I mean, I don't know that it'll ever make it as a book.
So have you thought about a blog?
I have four.
When you're talking about hitting people over the head with a hammer, have you thought about changing names to protect the innocent?
I don't remember his name, so...
Who got hit over the head with a hammer then?
Nobody got hit over the head with a hammer because my mother saw me running through the living room with a hammer in my... We were living with my grandparents at the time. My grandfather was a cop.
Was there a video of this by any chance?
No, there was no video of this. You know.
Film.
I'm not even sure there was film. There is a
cave paintings?
A cave drawing. And yeah.
If you ever do the book, we just came up with the cover.
I like it.
The illustrations inside can be stick figures. It's like they say in Hollywood, we'll fix it with puppets. This is great.
Yeah. We'll CGI the book, right? Yeah.
That's how we get to look good. That's really how we get to look good.
Anyway, my mother grabbed my hand as I was coming down the guy's head.
Oh.
And I have no idea
who that was.
Well, I know who that was. It was my best friend at the time. Not anymore. But,
but so is the restraining order run out yet?
I don't know why I was doing that.
Should I get one?
You're 5 years old.
Yeah. I was 5 years
old. The level of logic at 5 years old is not going to show up until you're 10.
And I had access to the weapons because we lived behind my grandfather's cobbler shop, and so he had lots of knives and hammers and awls and...
Oh, marvelous.
All sorts of stuff.
Hey, so just bringing it back to writing on Whidbey Island,
yeah,
the title of this podcast.
Oh, that thing we've digressed from.
That's very good. So is there anything you want to say about what it's like to be a writer on Whidbey Island? I mean, the fact that, you know, there's more than one of us here?
You know, I there's three of us. I joke that, at least on South Whidbey, because that's where I live and that's what I'm most familiar with, if somebody is not a writer that you meet on the street, they're a visual artist, an actor, a musician, or a dancer.
Yes.
Or they have a manuscript for a play in their pocket.
Right.
You know, it's an amazingly supportive, creative community. And I'm very thankful for it. I don't know that this would have ever happened in Seattle.
That's what I was wondering. Is it one of the reasons you're still, like you say, you've stayed here longer than any place else you've ever lived?
My wife won't move.
Ah, okay.
And
okay,
I mean,
forget about you.
So,
is that why
and
you
I don't have any desire to leave Whidbey Island. I like islands and I like Whidbey, even though I hated it when we moved here. But that's a different story. Had nothing to do with Whidbey.
We might have to have him back.
Well, you know, that's another bit of reading material.
It
writing
could
material.
Be another book, yeah.
Like another writing prompt and whatnot.
Right.
Check with my agent. The performance agent, not the literary agent, which I don't have. I Whidbey has amazing support for its creative people. I'm most familiar with the writers, of course, because I am one.
Yes.
And what I find fascinating, like I said, I don't know much about South or North, I mean Central or North Whidbey. But I do know that when the Writers Association used to run writing contests for kids, the winners by and large came out of North Whidbey.
And you were saying like the kids?
Oak Harbor. And yeah, they were amazing. They were, there was some...
That could also just be a population difference.
I think it's A, a population difference, and B, a faculty difference. If there was there was an English teacher or some teacher who was pushing her kids and supporting them in doing that. But for whatever reason, I mean, it's great to have our young people writing.
See, that's the thing I find really encouraging about having a community or like this or whatever, especially around writing and in the arts, but particularly in writing, because writing is such a solitary thing until you get around to editing, is that one person makes such a difference. One person convincing you to write a book, one person convincing you to go ahead with your idea, or teaching a class of kids. And there are so many writers here that finding support for writing is fairly straightforward.
Yeah, and I got to say, from my own experience, both as a writer and as an observer, being part of a writing group is just incredibly supportive. I would never have gotten this book done. You probably wouldn't have gotten some of your books.
Oh, for sure.
If
nothing else, it's wonderful to go into a writing group, read something, be really proud of it, and just see a whole table full of blank faces and going, well, I guess we're not putting that in the book the way it is.
Well, the other thing is that at least in the writing group that you and I were in, we had to produce.
Yes.
And we had to produce before we got to the group. So I was, you know, I was constantly the day before, 2 days before, sitting down, knocking out my 1,000 words.
Yes.
The group I'm in now, we just write to prompts in the moment.
Yes.
Which is a lot easier with less stress, but the quality of the work is phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, with that, sir, anything else you want to tell us where to find the book? You already told us, but tell us again how to spell your name, how to pronounce your name, and you got a website or anything
like that? I'm hoping he'll show us how to pronounce his name in expressive dance.
in expressive
pants.
That's
on the video.
You have to pay extra for the dance.
Right.
The book is called Learning to Float, Memoir of a Caregiver Husband. It's available through Amazon as an ebook or hard copy. It's available. Any bookstore, I think, can order it from Ingram if you don't like dealing with Amazon. Here on the island, it's available at the Commons and Moonraker. At least it should be. Or at my house.
Well, there you go. You're going to give us your address?
Not a chance in hell.
What time is dinner?
Yeah, that explains your sales.
Dinner is whenever I figure out what the hell it's going to be.
Oh, okay.
My wife's book is called Iridescent Light, The Emergence of Northwest Art, from the University of Washington Press. If you have any interest in Northwest art, it's a great book. It's not as good as mine, but it's a great book.
When we interview her, when we get a difference, yes.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're
the other thing.
People.
I'm sorry?
We're courageous people.
Yeah. I did have an interesting experience about 6 months after my book came out, as my publishing company went belly up.
Oh.
So they did it very ethically, in that they told everybody it was happening, and they returned all of the rights. And
oh, marvelous.
Yeah. They were,
I'm actually looking forward to my publisher releasing the rights so that I can do the books right this time.
Yeah. They were, it was a great concept that didn't work.
Yeah. Well,
so many of our business ideas are that way.
Business is an art in its own right.
Yeah.
So with that, shall we?
One of the questions that we ask people when we interview them is what writer, or, well, not necessarily limited to writer, but who would you suggest on Whidbey Island that we interview next, whether they are a writer, an editor, a book graphic artist, a bookstore owner, whatever it is, as long as it's relative to writing, who would you suggest that you would like to hear on the show?
Well, definitely Josh from Moonraker.
Ah, yeah. I've met Josh. She received me very warmly when I went in to pitch her carrying my book. And she gave me a hug.
Oh, sweet.
And I found out...
South Whidbey.
Yeah, and I found out that my book is available via Ingram, and she didn't want my books because she can get them on her own.
There you go.
So I don't even know if she has them at this point, but it was just... I really want to underline, it was a marvelous experience meeting her.
Wayne Udy, for sure.
We got Wayne.
Deborah Nettleman.
Oh, yeah.
Who is a writer... published several books.
Also runs writing workshops.
Also did a... was the publisher for the Whidbey magazine, the name of which
escapes me. Whidbey Life magazine.
Whidbey Life, yeah.
Used to write for them.
She would be a good interview. Petra Martin might be a good interview.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somebody else that I lost...
Well, you've given us enough to work with. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Well,
thanks for doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Fun.
Well, you know, we're paying you so much for it.
You are, actually. You just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
We might be getting the bill from the lawyer later.
Alan.
The address is Tom's address. You can send that to Tom's address, so that's just fine.
I have yours, too.
Email address?
I think so. I have your website address.
You have a distinctive truck.
I'm going to have to take the license plate off of there. Well, this has been another episode of Writing on Whidbey Island, also known as Wowie. And for our background sounds today, we have been recording outside of... Well, we're at Bayview Corner. There was a sound. We're not far from where we interviewed Cam here a number of weeks ago. But we're right out front of Salon Bella and the Cash Store, which I know nothing about the Cash Store.
Except for the fact that there's Father and Vine, so there's wine there.
Oh.
And beside that is the Tap Room, so there's beer and cider there. And beside that is Whidbey Donuts.
So
you can really be decadent here.
And we could meet a number of authors in the next 5 minutes.
Yes, really.
And the Tap Room sells a basket of bacon.
Yes. Yes. And
in case anybody is worried about being healthy.
And upstairs from here, upstairs, the second floor, is a co-works specifically for writers. which, ironically, I haven't been part of because I've been so busy writing for pay that I haven't been able to drop by to the co-works to write with other writers.
Yeah, my wife had that same problem when she was a journalist.
Yeah.
She didn't do any creative writing
because
she was exhausted.
Yeah, well, so anyway, and so the podcasts, at least at the start here, are residing on my website, trimbathcreative.net, and look under the page for speaking. And hopefully we will eventually put this on its own platform.
We're looking for things. So if you have any suggestions, go ahead and contact us. Let us know what podcast forums that you draw your podcast from, because we're kind of new to this and we're still learning too. But we would also like to go to where you're already at. So go ahead and get a hold of us.
So this is Tom Trimbath, and you just got my website. And I'm on Twitter at T.E. Trimbath.
I can be found as Woodby Island Baking Company in a number of different places. But more than anything, look me up at woodbyislandbaking.com. That's not banking or bacon. It's baking, like with flour and butter and eggs and stuff and good smells. And we
no
had,
bacon?
Actually, I have made biscotti with bacon, and it also disappeared. I preferred the peanut butter bacon. The chocolate bacon, not so good. But, hey, everybody else loved it. So, yeah. Anyway, we have wonderfully had Alan Ahmet with us today, or Ahmet today.
Ahmet.
Okay, I moved the L, one of the L's from Alan into your last name, sorry. Anyway, his book is Learning to Float. Look for it online and at every bookshop. And if it's not at the bookshop, ask them to order it, because then they'll think about carrying it. And that helps to support writers, and we do appreciate that. So thank you again for joining us with our show, and do look for the next one, and we will talk more about Woodby Island and writing, and hopefully things that are pertinent to you as our brother and sister writers out there. Thank you. See you again.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.